How We Learned to Fly by Kidden, read by I Am Just Me. The first reason, at 5 or 6 or 7, was a book his mother read to him at night, curled around him in this twin bed, whispering in his ear. She told him, kisses pressed to his cheeks and her hands tight around his belly, "Don't believe what your eyes are telling you. All they show is limitation. Look with your understanding." John would cover their heads with blankets, and in that little world he'd make the clouds, white yarn from his father's sweater and cotton balls, the ocean, blue, blue, so blue, made of colored paper, torn at the edges and rough like the sea. And then, his fingers, twisted together with wings, the perfect little seagull. His mother would laugh and join in, her hands much bigger but shaped just the same, both of them, two beautiful seagulls. She'd say, "We can lift ourselves out of ignorance. We can find ourselves as creatures of excellence and intelligence and skill. We can be free. We can learn to fly." And John, tiny and wide-eyed, would ask her to tell it again, right from the beginning. He'd say, "Is that where Daddy is now, practicing?" And his mother's eyes, colored brown and green and gold like his, would look down at him with so much love the sky would burst open above them. Fireworks and cartoons and all those things he cared so much about then. And she'd say, "He'll be home soon, Johnny." She'd pull him into her lap, his feet cold, tucked in around her skirts, and she'd say, "The wind is going to pick him right off the ground. His bones are hollow like a bird, you know," she'd say and laugh. "And Daddy will spread his big wings, and he'll remember how much he loves you, and the wind will carry him along right to your window." "Like when we pray?" John would say, crawling from her lap and into his own sea of blankets and pillows. "Exactly like that," she'd whisper, lulling him to sleep with her warm hands, brushing his wild hair from his eyes. As a teenager, he'd come to know the place his father lived then was not the sky, but someplace else entirely. Someplace on the other side of the wide Pacific. He'd learned words like communism, Operation Ranch Hand, Rolling Thunder, Malai. His black and white world, clouds of cotton and oceans of paper, burning away into something ugly and sinister, opening its mouth to swallow him whole. The first time Major John Shepherd meets him, Dr. Rodney McKay says, "I'm worth more than you and this entire heap of metal, put together and quadrupled, possibly more. Do not crash." Shepard salutes him sarcastically and grins, decides immediately that Dr. McKay is not a nice person at all. Shepard's never flown as bad as he does for those 15 minutes, and he knows he never, ever will again. But watching Dr. McKay being led away, green-faced and sick, well, he figures it was worth it. But the speed was power, the speed was joy, and the speed was pure beauty. The second reason came like this. He was 14, and kissing lips that were like his, shape and texture, and a tongue sweet like soda and pixie sticks sliding against his foolishly. But it was good, so good, and John opened his mouth and kissed back, their lips and noses and cheeks all the same, lined up, symmetric and perfect. Breaking away from each other, the same boyish grins on their faces. His father's hand, calloused and weathered from war and time and life, came down hard on John's back, gripping him by his shirt, pulling him up, throwing him away, and John's friend, oh, the word boyfriend, too unusual and sticking to his tongue, cowering back and pushing himself away. John's father standing over them, big and everywhere, like how he imagined God had to be. He said, towering still over them, impossibly large, his voice rumbling and thick and heavy, "This is how you'll get it. The disease they talk about, the gay disease, is that what you want? Because that's where you're headed. You'll die, Johnny. Don't you understand that?" Because they lived in Southern California and it was 1981 and the world was teetering right there on the edge of never being safe again, maybe it was already too late for that. And his father was more than hard and tough and mean. He was scared. So when John told him, days later, imagining he could still taste the fountain soda sugar of his real first kiss, that he was going to join, his father cried, hugging him manly and tight, patting his back. He said, "Oh God, that's my boy." As an adult, he'd know that the disease was AIDS, and he'd be able to name half a dozen friends gone from it, sex or drugs or blood transfusions. As an adult, standing under the sweltering Afghanistan sun, he'd know that when his father cried, there was no happiness there. He cried for what he was taking away from John, freedom and choice, and maybe happiness. And when his father said, "Oh God," well, it wasn't a prayer of thanks or sigh or relief. Perhaps it was something else completely. Standing there, John wonders whether there was a trade being made, disease for war, for happiness for safety, love for respect. There has never been a way to really tell. The second time John Shepherd meets Rodney McKay, well, he really doesn't notice him, actually. He's way too preoccupied with suddenly there being aliens, more than just aliens, but technology, stargates, and teams of people who travel through wormholes every day for years. He's way too busy to notice him at all. Except someone says, "Major, picture where we are in the solar system." Just like that, something opens inside him, warm and cool at the same time, a rolling wave of coming home, of being able to do anything. In his mind, unfolding like a familiar map, solar system, the sun, Mercury, Venus. Oh, Earth. He's never seen it like this before, and he pauses, focuses on it, green and blue and white, then on to Mars and Jupiter, and beyond that, he can almost touch them, the other solar systems, so many other galaxies. He's been there forever, it feels like. He always has. But he's only blinked, and when he opens his eyes above him, there is Earth again, and all he can think to say is, "Did I do that?" There's a pair of bright blue eyes that meet his own. They're so full of energy and excitement, the thrill of discovery. Shepherd thinks, wildly, he could spend his whole life trying to make those eyes light up that way, again and again and again.